Britons of Cambria, outlines of their history and institutions from the earliest to the present times, by R.W. Morgan, from the Primary Source edition. The Druidic Religion of Britain. The Druidic religion was brought into Britain by the Gomeridae from the mountains of Noah, or the Caucasus, at the first emigration under Hugh Gadarn. Its leading principles were the following. God is an infinite spirit, whose nature is wholly a mystery to man in his present state. He is self-existence. From him all creation emanated, and into him it is always resolving, and will always continue to resolve itself back. To the human mind, but not in himself, he necessarily presents a triple aspect in relation to the past, the present, and the future. The creator as to the past, the saviour or preserver as to the present, and the recreator as to the future. In the recreator, the idea of the destroyer was also involved. The Druidic names for God were Dew, Dion, Dovid, Kelly, Yor, Perid, Rune, and Ner. Matter is the creation of God. Without God, it cannot exist. Nature is the action of God through the medium of matter. The universe is matter as ordered and systematized by the intelligence of God. It was created by God's pronouncing his own name, at the sound of which light and the heavens sprung into existence. The name of God is in itself a creative power. What in itself that name is known to God only. All music or natural melody is a faint and broken echo of the creative name. The Druidic symbol of it is three pencils of light. Of these three lines in various conjunctions was framed the first or bardic alphabet. Knowledge and religion cannot be separated. The universe is in substance eternal and imperishable, but subject to successive cycles of dissolution and renovation. The soul is a particle of the deity, possessing in embryo all his capabilities. Its action is defined and regulated by the nature of the physical organization that it animates. The lowest point of sentient existence is that in which evil is unmitigated by any particle of good. From this point, existence ascends by cycles of genera until it attains its acme by being blended with that of the deity. The human cycle is the middle one, in which good and evil are equipoised. Every human being is a free agent. The soul, according to its choice, being liable to fall back into the lower cycles, or capable of rising into the higher. Probation ceases with the human cycle. Above it, good becomes the dominant, evil the helpless principle. Continually thus ascending, the soul becomes at last united to and a part of God, and in God again pervades the universe. A soul which has passed the probationary state has the power of returning to it and assuming, for the good of mankind, the morphosis of humanity. The reincarnation of such is felt in its action and effects through the whole race, whose nature is thus taken by the superior being. The soul which prefers evil to good retrogrades to a cycle of animal existence, the baseness of which is on a par with the turpitude of its human life. The process of brutalization commences at the moment when evil is voluntarily preferred to good. To whatever cycle the soul falls, the means of reattaining humanity are always open to it. Every soul, however frequent its relapses, will ultimately attain the proper end of his existence, union with God. The creation of animals commenced with that of water molecules. Terrestrial animals are of a higher order than the aquatic and rise through distinct gradations up to man. animals, approach the human cycle in proportion to their utility and gentleness. Every animal may be killed by man in support or defence of his own life. Prior to the creation of man, nightlight alone prevailed. Man was created with the first rising sun. Death, or the dissolution of the present material organisation, is a simultaneous art with life, or the assumption of a new existence. The soul passes through an indefinite number of these migrations till it attains deity. A finite being cannot support eternity as a sameness or monotony of existence. The eternity of the soul, until it merges in the deity, is a succession of states of new sensations, the soul in each unfolding new capabilities of enjoyment. In creation, there is no evil which is not a greater good than an evil. The things called rewards and punishments are so secured by eternal ordinances that they are not consequences, but properties of our acts and habits. Except for crimes against society, the measure of punishment should be that which nature itself deals to the delinquent. Perfect penitence is entitled to pardon. That penitence is perfect, which makes the utmost compensation in its power for the wrong inflicted, and willingly submits to the penalty prescribed. The atonement of penitents who voluntarily submit themselves to death in expiation of guilt incurred is perfect. The souls of all such pass on to the higher cycles of existence. The justice of God cannot be satisfied except by the sacrifice of life in lieu of life. End of quote. Caesar's words are very remarkable, defining the doctrine of vicarious atonement with theological precision. Quote, "The Druids hold that by no other way than the ransoming of man's life by the life of man is reconciliation with the divine justice of the immortal gods possible." Close quote. From Caesar's Commentaries, Book 3. Such are a few of the principal doctrines of a religion which was at one time professed from the shores of the Baltic to the Straits of Gibraltar. In France, its central university was at Dreux. In Britain, it numbered 31 chief seats of education. Each seat was a cafeth or city, the capital of a tribe. Their names were as follows: the seats of the three arch-druids of Britain, Car Troy or Car Lud, London, Car Vroc, York, Car Leon, Car Leon. The seats of the chief druids of Britain were Car Cant, Canterbury, Car Wynne, Winchester, Car Munisip, St Albans, Car Sulloch, Old Sarum, Salisbury, Carlisle, Carlisle, Car Grant, Cambridge or Granter, Carmini, Manchester, Car Gwerthigion, Palmcaster, Car Cole, Colchester, Car Gorangon, Worcester, Car Leon a Dewey, Chester, Car Paris, Porchester, Car Don, Doncaster, Car Gurick, Warwick, Car Mavod, Mavod, Car Adour, Bristol, Car Lear, Leicester, Car Urnach, Wroxeter, Car Leon, Lincoln, Car Glau, Gloucester, Car Kay, Chichester, Car Kerry, Cirencester, Car Dur, Dorchester, Car Merdin, Car Marthen, Car Sciont, Car Narvon, Car Wisk, Exeter, Car Sigont, Silchester, and Car Badon, Bath. The revolution of 2,000 years has effected but slight change in the original names of these cities. The students at these colleges numbered at times 60,000 souls, amongst whom were included the young nobility of Britain and Gaul. The authority and privileges of the Druidic order were very great. They sat as magistrates, deciding all questions of law and equity. They regulated and presided over the rites and ceremonies of religion. The power of excommunication, lodged in their hands, put the party against whom it was issued out of the pale of the law. They were exempt from military duties, taxes, and imposts. A tenth of the land was appropriated for their support. None but a Druid could offer sacrifice, nor was any candidate admissible to the order who could not prove his genealogy from free parents for 9 generations back. The consent of the head of the clan, or of 12 fathers of families in the clan, was necessary to the public admission of a candidate into the order. The examinations, preparatory to full initiation into the 2 higher grades of the Bard and the Druid, were with great severity. An Ovid might claim his grade by proving himself in public examination before the head of the clan and 12 Druids, master of the special art or science he professed to teach or exercise. None but the initiated were taught the esoteric doctrines of the order, hence the profound reserve maintained on certain points of their teaching by Taliesin and the other Christo-Druidic bards. The sacred animal of their religion was the milk-white bull, the sacred bird, the wren, the sacred tree, the oak, the sacred plant, the mistletoe, the sacred herbs, the trefoil and the vervain, the sacred form, that of the 3 divine letters or rays, in the shape of a cross, symbolizing the triple aspect of God. The sacred herbs and plant, with another plant, hyssop, the emblem of fortitude in adversity, were gathered on the 6th day of the moon. The vast monumental remains of the Druid establishment extend over Britain, from Cornwall to the Hebrides. In South Britain, or Logria, the central temples were those of Amber and Belin, Stonehenge. In Alban, Perth and its vicinity. In Cambria, Mona were the chief districts for the obelisk churches and the splendid national ceremonies therein performed. Each of these temples was a planetarium or representation of the system of the heavens. The principles on which they are constructed are strictly astronomical, and the accuracy with which the ponderous monoliths which compose them are adjusted demonstrates a very high state of mechanical science. The Druidic principles allowed no monolith to be profaned by the touch of steel or other metal. Neither could any other than massive single stones, solid throughout, be used in their temples. These architectural remains of the old Britannic religion lie for the most part on the elevated ridges or in the mountain solitudes of the island, indicating their construction to have commenced at that remote date when the lowlands were still partially submerged. In Greece and Italy, these Japhetic ruins are known as the Cyclopean or Titanic. The Druids of Britain, observes Dr. Stukeley in his work on Stonehenge, advanced their inquiries to such heights as should make the moderns ashamed of themselves, and we may with reason conclude there was somewhat very extraordinary in those principles which prompted them to such a noble spirit as produced these works, which for grandeur and simplicity exceed any of the European wonders. In strictness, none of the Druidic circles can be termed temples, for the Druids taught there were but 2 inhabitations of the deity, the soul, the invisible, and the universe, the visible temple. The monolithic structures were types only of the latter. The great festivals of Druidism were 3, the solstitial festivals of the rise and fall of the year, and the winter festival. At the spring festival, the Beltane, or sacred fire, was brought down by means of a burning lens from the sun, and no hearth in the island was held sacred until the fire on it had been relit from the Beltane. The Beltane became the Easter festival of Christianity, as the midwinter festival, in which the mistletoe was cut with the golden crescent from the sacred oak, became Christmas. The mistletoe, with its three berries, was the symbol of the deity in his triple aspect, its growth on the oak of the incarnation of the deity in man. The hypaethal altar in the Druidic circle was called the cromlech, or the stone of adoration, literally the stone of bowing. On it, the hostia, or victim to be immolated, was laid, and in order that the blood might run off more easily, its position was inclined. Near it, another stone received in an excavation the aqua pura, or the holy water, that is, rainwater direct from heaven. Druidism itself was ordinarily known as Imun, the stone. The canonicals of the Archdruid were extremely gorgeous. On his head, he wore a tiara of gold, in his girdle, the gem of augury, on his breast, the Iar Moraine, or the breastplate of judgment, and below it, the Glanida, or dragonic egg. On the forefinger of the right hand, the signet ring of the order. On the forefinger of the left, the gem ring of inspiration. Before him were borne the Colbren, or volume of esoteric mysteries, and the golden crozier with which the mistletoe was gathered. His robe was of white linen, with a broad purple border, the symbolic cross being wrought in gold down the length of the back. When Druidism merged into Christianity, these rites, festivals, and canonicals became those of the Christian Church. Little variation exists between the modern ceremonials of religion, as witnessed in a Roman Catholic cathedral, and those of Druidic Britain 2,000 years since. Their derivation from Druidism is not more evident than the striking contrast they present to the simple and unadorned ritual of primitive Christianity. Some of these observances are common to Judaism and Druidism, others are to be found in Druidism alone. No Druidic service could be celebrated or rite observed except between sunrise and sunset. Every official act was to be discharged in the eye of the light and the face of the sun. The seat of the presiding Druid was termed Gorset. To remove it was a capital offence. The great Gorsedau, or convocations, were held at the solstices and the equinoxes, the minor at the new and full moon. The vestments of the bard were blue, of the druid white, and of the ovate green. The druids taught a viva voce. No part of their teaching was allowed to be committed to writing. In public transactions, they used the bardic characters, and in transactions with foreigners, the bardic or Greek, as occasion required. From the importance they attached to the sublime study of astronomy, they were termed by the Greeks Sirenidae, from Sirenidion, from the Cymric Siren, a star. Astronomers. Their system of education appears to have embraced a wide range of arts and sciences. The Druidic religion was preeminently patriotic. Hence, it was the only Gentile religion systematically misrepresented and marked out for extirpation by the Roman government, all others being received indifferently to its protection. The spirit it infused into the people contributed no less than the military science displayed by a series of able and intrepid commanders to render the tardy progress of the Roman arms in Britain a solitary exception to the rapidity of their conquests in other parts of the world. Diodorus Maximus quotes a Druidic triad as well known to the Greeks. Quote, "Worship the gods, do no man wrong, be valiant for your country." Close quote. Valerius Maximus mentions a curious fact, illustrative of the sincerity of their faith in the doctrines that they held. Quote, "The Druids have so firm a conviction of the immortality of the soul that they advance sums of money to their friends, on the understanding that such money, or its equivalent, is to be repaid when they meet after death." Close quote. It is certain, states Lucan, the Druidic nations have no fear of death. Their religion rather impels them to seek it. Their souls are its masters, and they think it contemptible to spare a life, the return of which is so sure. The Druidic religion, in its corrupted Asiatic or Semitic form of Buddhism, is still the religion of nearly one half of mankind. We have noticed its leading features, therefore, at greater length than the compass of this little volume would have warranted us in doing, those of any obsolete or defunct faith, such as the mythologies of Greece or of Rome.
You're listening to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
Druidism, the Religion of Britain and Western Europe by R. W. Morgan. Westward of Italy, embracing Hispania, Gallia, the Rhenish frontiers, portions of Germany and Scandinavia, with its headquarters and great seats of learning fixed in Britain, extended the Druidic religion. There can be no question that this was the primitive religion of mankind, covering at one period in various forms the whole surface of the ancient world. The ramifications of Druidism penetrated, indeed, into Italy, Greece, and Asia Minor, nor did Plato hesitate to affirm that all the streams of Greek philosophy were to be traced not to Egypt, but to the fountains of the West. The prehistoric poets of Greece, anterior to the mythological creations of Homer and Hesiod, were, as their names imply, Druids. Musaeus, Orpheus, Linus, Knowledge, the Harp, the White-Robed. Such historians were necessarily poets, for with the Druids, metre was the vehicle of instruction. The visit of the British Druid, Ebaris, was long remembered at Athens. Greek fancy converted the magnetic needle by which he guided his travels into an arrow of Apollo, which would transport him at wish whithersoever he pleased. A more celebrated Druid, Pythagoras, founded a school in Italy, the effects of which, though he himself and many of his leading scholars perished in a popular commotion, were never wholly obliterated. The transmigration of souls, their pre-existence and immortality, the true theories of the heavenly bodies and their revolutions, the severity of the esoteric system, with its silence and secrecy, being observed by various Italian sects down to the Christian era. In the Aegean Sea, Samothrace and Delos were eastern cells of the same priesthood, the same rites being observed as in Britain, and embassies at stated periods exchanging visitations. In earlier ages, the city of circles in Asia Minor, Troy, and the Minoan labyrinth in Crete were seats of the same widely extended religion, and in Egypt, the name of the great mother temple, Karnak, identifies its remote founders with those of the mother temple of the same name in Brittany, both meaning the high stones of worship. In the East, however, the principles of Druidism could only be traced in its earliest records, while on the continent of Europe they bore in practice and development the same corrupt relation to primitive Druidism as at present the Roman Catholic religion in the same countries does to primitive Christianity. In Britain, on the contrary, it had for many reasons, the inaccessibility of the island, its freedom from foreign invasion, its character as sanctity, its possession by Gomeridae, retained, in great degree, its original purity. In the time of St. Paul, it had been for a period of 2,000 years the established religion, and the attachment of the people to its rule, with a desperate and well-sustained defence they made in its behalf, and that of their country, against the whole force of the Roman Empire, in the meridian of its power, confirm the impression left by a dispassionate examination of the remains of its theology, which have descended to us in the ancient British tongue. Namely, that it was a highly moral, elevating and beneficent religion, a superstructure not unworthy the principle on which it assumed to be built, and by which it offered itself to be judged, namely, the truth against the world. It has been observed by the historian Hume that no religion has ever swayed the minds of men like the Druidic. The determined efforts of the Roman Empire to overthrow its supremacy and, if possible, suppress it altogether, prove that its rulers had been made practically aware of this fact. A Druidic triad familiar to the Greeks and the Romans was: three duties of every man, worship God, be just to all men, and die for your country. It was this last duty, impressed by 1,000 examples and precepts, and not its religious tenets or philosophy, which caused Druidism to be marked for destruction by an empire which aspired to universal dominion and to merge all nationalities in one city. The edicts of the emperors Augustus and Tiberius proscribed it throughout their dominions, making the exercise of the functions of a Druidic priest as those of the Roman priest in the reigns of the Tudor sovereigns in England a treasonable offence. But nations cannot be proscribed. The Druidic colleges in Britain, the only free state in Europe at this period, continue to educate and send forth their alumni to all parts of the continent. Not till AD 43, that is 14 years only before the arrival of St. Paul in Rome, did the second or Claudian invasion of Britain take place. It took 10 years of incessant warfare to establish a firm footing in the south of the island, nor was it until 7 years after the fall of Caractacus that the Roman state ventured to give its legions orders to carry out the leading object of the invasion: the destruction, by force of arms, of the Druidic chori, or seminaries, in Britain. The Boadicean War and the death of 80,000 Roman citizens were the first results of this policy of religious dragonnades. Druidism was founded by Gwydion Ganhebon, supposed to be the Seth of the Mosaic genealogy in Asia, in the year when the equinox occurred in the first point of Taurus, or the constellation of the bull. Every year, the equinoctial year is completed about 20 minutes before the sun has made a complete revolution from a certain star to the same star again. This arises from the precession of the equinoxes, or from a slow revolution of the pole of the equator around that of the ecliptic. In 25,920 years, the pole of the equator makes one entire revolution around that of the ecliptic, hence the equinoctial couleur occurs before it did the preceding year. In 72 years, the precession amounts to 1 degree. If, therefore, we have the equinoctial or solstitial point given in the ecliptic at any unknown period, it is easy to discover, by comparing it with the present solstitial point, how long that period is past. When the Druidic system was founded, the equinox, on the 1st of May, occurred in the first point of Taurus, which first point is now, on the 1st of May, 80 degrees from this solstitial point. It requires 72 years to recede 1 degree. 80 degrees multiplied by 72 gives 5,760. The exact date when Druidism commenced, i.e. 3,903 years before the Christian era, 181 years after the creation of Adam, and 50 years after the birth of Seth. The astral bull of milk-white hue, its horns crowned with golden stars, became the symbol or visible sacrament of Druidism. In process of time, the symbol, as usual, superseded in the East the thing signified, and Druidism became that Tauric religion which gave the Crimea the appellation of the Tauric Chersonese. Extending thence, this corruption became the religion of Mithras in Persia, of Baal in Assyria, of Brahma in India, of Ashtart or the Dea Syria in Syria, of Apis in Egypt, and in later ages transferred from Egypt of the two Apis, or calves as they are rendered in our version of the scriptures, of the kingdom of Israel. In all these religions, the bull, or Taurus, was the sacred animal, and the symbol was preserved free, as far as we can judge, from idolatry by the Gomeridae of Britain. The bull was the sign and representant of the great Druidic Isle, and the name, still in common parlance, continues to indicate a Briton of Britain as distinguished from the rest of the world. From Asia, Druidism was brought into Britain by Hugadan, or Hugh the Mighty, its first coloniser, a contemporary of the patriarch Abraham, and under his successors, Plenit, Goron, Alan and Rivon, it assumed its complete organisation, becoming both the ecclesiastical and the civil constitution of the island. About 5 centuries before the Christian era, its civil laws were codified by Donald Mulmud, the British Numa, and have since that period remained the common unwritten or native laws of the island, as distinguished from the Roman, the Canon, and other codes of foreign introduction. These British or Druidic laws have been always justly regarded as the foundation and bulwark of British liberties. The examination of them does not fall within our present purpose. The civil code and the sciences were taught by the Druids, orally or in writing indifferently, to every citizen, but the Druidic system of divinity was never committed to writing, nor imparted, except to the initiated, and then under obligations to secrecy of a very awful character. It is, however, to the infraction of these obligations, when their force had been impaired by the influences of Christianity, that we are indebted for such knowledge as we possess of the real principles of the primitive religion of our island. The Druidic was essentially a priesthood of peace, neither wearing arms nor permitting arms to be unsheathed in its presence, and through patriotism, or the defence of one's country in a just war, was a high virtue in its system. We have no instance of Druidism persecuting or using physical force against any other religion or set of opinions. Its whole theory, indeed, would have stultified itself in so doing, and herein consists no small part of its identity with Christianity. The saying of Taliesin, the prince bard and druid, conveys a great historical truth, though overstrongly expressed. Christ, the word from the beginning, was from the beginning our teacher, and we never lost his teaching. Christianity was a new thing in Asia, but there never was a time when the druids of Britain held not to its doctrines.